Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Over the past few months, children have largely avoided serious physical illness due to COVID-19. But that doesn't mean they're immune to the psychological impacts of the pandemic. As the new school year approaches, there are growing concerns about what this crisis has meant for children's mental and developmental health, the toll of which won't be understood fully for years to come. Over the weekend, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos defended the administration's push to reopen schools throughout the country, even though cases around the country continue to rise. So we spoke with Abigail Gewirtz, a child psychologist and professor at the University of Minnesota.
When we think about how this has affected our children, I would like us to start with thinking about how this has affected us, because our kids see the world through the bubble of their family. So both directly and indirectly through their parents are kids affected.
Long before the pandemic started, there were rising rates of anxiety and depression in children across the U.S., but Abigail told me there are signs we can look for in our children that might indicate shifts in their mental health.
Kids of different ages display different kinds of behaviors and reactions. Worry and fear and anxiety are shown in different ways by different people as well as at different ages. So your very young children may be clingy. They may not want to leave the house without you. They may find it hard to go to sleep. You may have a kid who's been sleeping through the night and suddenly wakes up with a nightmare or has wet the bed or wants to come into mom and dad's bed, for example. Then you have the less typical reactions, kids whose reaction doesn't seem driven by worry, but maybe they're spending a lot more time in their room alone on their phones. And you don't necessarily want to encourage a kid who was outside a lot to be staying in their room, and you might want to find out what's going on. Because, of course, in this pandemic, unlike the last pandemic 100 years ago, we have the added dimension of electronic communication and social media and 24/7 access to news, which is a double-edged sword.
The big debate right now is whether or not, or how, I should say, schools are going to open up in the fall. There are parents who are obviously burned out and tired of having the kids at home who say they want to have these schools open, mostly because they function as a child care system in addition to an educational facility. But there's also the element of socializing in school. And I'm wondering whether or not the absence of in-person learning has also had an effect on children. And I said in-person learning, and maybe to a larger extent, daycare and other facilities that are now starting to open up but have been closed for the past couple of months.
Without a doubt, Tanzina, without a doubt. I mean, play and learning in school, that's kids' work. That's what they do. And there is an incredibly powerful function of being around other people your age, doing whatever it is kids do in school, in daycare, in after-school activities, in sports. They learn to get along with others. And that is one of the most crucial things that we need to do in order to produce healthy, functioning adults. That's been taken away from our kids, and it's upsetting and frustrating and exhausting, not just for parents, but for kids too. And of course, that has to be balanced against the very real danger of the spread of this pandemic. So it's a really stressful and hard time for kids and parents alike.
Are there risk factors that make certain children more vulnerable right now, like things like race or class?
Well, I think we've seen that in the last few months. It's in the news. It's everywhere. It's the unfortunate fact that people who are vulnerable by virtue of the fact that they experience systemic racism and injustices, who are living in poverty or dealing with socioeconomic stresses, are the ones who always get the hardest hit. And you see it in the data about the virus. And in school, unfortunately, we're going to see it in terms of kids being ready to learn again, because the children who are going to need the most support are the children who historically have needed the most support. And it's a big challenge for parents and for teachers and administrators too.
What can parents be doing to support their children's mental and developmental health right now?
What parents can do is let their children know that in a chaotic and sometimes very frightening world, they have their kids' backs. And so, for example, when your child comes into the house, has just been playing with the neighbor, and reports that their friend's grandma is in the hospital with the virus, what you might want to say to your child is, "Don't worry, I'm sure she'll be fine." Because that's our way of saying to our children, "Don't worry, I'll protect you." But of course, it's something that we can't say because it's just not true. We can't promise anything like that. What we can do is truly listen to them. So for example, that might be, "Honey, I can really see that you are upset and worried. And I can see that because your eyes are lowered and you have tears in your eyes. And I wonder if your heart is beating fast or you have butterflies in your tummy, because that's what happens to me when I feel worried about something. And if one of my friend's relatives was sick, or if someone in our family was sick, I would be worried too. It's really natural to be worried about people." And so what you're doing by that is helping your children to identify their emotions as really valid and important signals of what's going on around them. And then what you do is you sit down and listen to your child, and without making bland reassurances or promises that you can't keep, sit together and engage in a problem-solving process where you brainstorm what your child can do, either to feel less worried or to help their friend, so that your child is feeling empowered. Because when things that happen, like the pandemic, that are out of our control, we feel powerless and helpless, and that is a very scary feeling.
We ask a lot of teachers in this country, but as schools begin to debate reopening, and some are considering actually having in-person learning in the fall, is there something that teachers should be aware of to better manage the kids that are coming back to school and that have really had this interruption in their lives?
First, I want to say that teachers are remarkable. I mean, they are already on the front lines. And for those who will be going back to school in person, they will truly be on the front lines, just like our medical providers and anybody who's a first responder. I do hope, and I have no doubt, that school administrators will have teachers' backs and care for teachers and provide support for teachers in the same way that we expect teachers to do for their students. I think the first sort of principle is the idea of predictability and routine, and helping kids to get back to that by giving them a heads up. And, you know, all teachers write letters to their students, or some call their students before the school year starts to let them know what to expect. And I think that's going to be even more important this year, for students to get some practice and knowledge ahead of time about exactly what will be happening. And sometimes, you know, in this rapidly changing environment, you can't always know what's happening. So focus on what you can know and share that with students. And then the other thing is just to know that some kids are going to be coming back with a wide range of needs based on what work they were able to accomplish. I mean, we expected kids to be doing online school, six-year-olds who have two parents working and with no help. And that, in many situations, was an unrealistic expectation. And so kids are going to be coming back with varying degrees of needs, and that's going to be harder for teachers.
Abigail Gewirtz is a child psychologist and professor at the University of Minnesota. She's also the author of the book, When the World Feels Like a Scary Place, Essential Conversations for Anxious Parents and Worried Kids. Abigail, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tanzina. It was my pleasure.